The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week in the headlines, gaming disorder and the potential demise of mindfulness, two controversial stories to bring you. If you're thinking about booking your summer holiday, stay tuned as I have the most annoying habits which stress you out. I'll mix in some yoga, laughter therapy and music with a holiday theme, and wise words this week from the grandfather of therapy, Sigmund Freud. So if you want a different perspective on mental health, then this show is not to be missed. Join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Mental health news making the headlines this week. In 2018, playing video games obsessively might lead to a diagnosis of a mental health disorder. In the draft of its forthcoming 11th International Classification of Diseases, the World Health Organization includes gaming disorder in its list of mental health conditions. The disorder is characterized by impaired control, and the WHO are classifying gaming as an addictive behavior, whereby increasing priority is given to gaming to the extent that gaming takes the precedence over other life interests and daily activities. However, a University of Oxford psychologist commented, "It's a very bad idea, and I'm concerned that most studies done on gaming addiction are low quality. Suggesting gaming addiction as a tried and true disorder could risk stigmatizing millions of gamers and may divert limited mental health resources from core psychiatric problems such as depression and anxiety." A spokesperson for the WHO said the new entry on gaming disorder includes only a clinical description and not prevention and treatment options. Also in the news, children and teens who are abused, witness violence, are bullied, or face other adversities are more likely to develop cardiovascular diseases in adulthood, according to a new report. The research is based on scientific information featuring a strong association between adverse experiences in childhood and teen years and a greater likelihood of developing risks such as obesity, high blood pressure, and type 2 diabetes. A spokesman for the research said, "The real tragedy is that children and young people are exposed to such destructive behaviour in the first place. Sadly, the negative consequences last far beyond the end of this abuse." How adversity fuels cardiovascular and metabolic abnormalities remains unclear, but evidence suggests behavioural, mental health and biological reactions to increased stress all appear to play a role. With the upsurge of people joining relaxation classes at the start of the year, a new study suggests there is a clear link to yoga as a tool to ease depressive symptoms. 32 people with moderate to severe depression were observed over a 12-week period, after which there was a clear decrease in depression scores. However, critics say it is hard to assess the specific effect yoga has on mental health. It could be the case that simply taking part in regular group activity was beneficial to the participants, and this alone could have had positive effects on their mental state. But the researchers say they don't intend for yoga to be a substitute for the treatment of depression by trained healthcare professionals. Finally, in the headlines this week, in a controversial statement, a psychologist has suggested mindfulness is outdated and mindlessness will be the new big trend for mental health this year. According to Dr. Meg Arrell, mindlessness, which focuses more on doing rather than being, may be the answer to health and well-being. The practice of mindfulness has seen a huge boom in the past decade, with countless books, apps, and other products on the market. But critics claim we are becoming a little obsessed with being in the moment. Being creative is a great way to move focus from the self to an enjoyable activity. Following a series of studies, Francis Reynolds, a senior academic at Brunel University, London, said the benefits of art making have been consistently found. In women with depression, needlecraft was found to provide physical, mental and emotional relaxation, build self-esteem and even increase energising thoughts and activities. This approach, which focuses more on doing, may be more useful for people that have had negative experiences with mindful practice in the past. Looking back at the news this week, there are a few controversial stories, not more so than mindfulness, which apparently is on the way out. We'll take a deeper look at this in a moment, but first I want to look back at the yoga story. When people talk about yoga, they often reference the physiological benefits of the practice, such as increased flexibility and decreased muscle stiffness. However, not enough is mentioned about the mental, psychological and cognitive benefits of yoga, and there are plenty. There have been several studies to assess the effectiveness of yoga for brain and mental health, and the research is promising. However, as we heard in the news, some mental health professionals are sceptical of the mental benefits. Okay, so we know yoga is subjective, but if you align yourself to the positives, here are a few thoughts I found online about yoga. Yoga improves your psychological mental well-being. Do you always seem stressed and tense? Do you feel as if you're carrying the entire world on your shoulders? With the help of yoga, you may be able to release these feelings. According to the British Psychological Society, yoga involves concentration on breathing and body, which makes it a great way to soothe a person's mind and relieve worries. By helping discharge tension and stress, yoga poses and breathing exercises keep a person free from such negative elements. As a result, a person who does yoga is said to be better able to achieve a good sense of psychological health. Yoga helps with anxiety and depression. Consisting of activities such as relaxation, meditation, socialization, and exercise, yoga has been proven helpful in reducing anxiety and depression. This is achieved by lower blood pressure and heart rates. Yoga provides you with the means to deal with and resolve anxiety and depression without resorting to medications. You know, I'm not sure that that last sentence is hugely positive in the sense that it is okay to take medication. There is no stigma. And as I read it, it suggests you don't need medication, which I find a little bit misleading. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. Yoga can boost memory and improve concentration. It has been proven effective at improving your memory and concentration, according to Women's Fitness magazine. For instance, Dharana, otherwise known as the practice of concentration, is the perfect way to clear your mind and calm your senses. As you remove the static noise in your head and focus your mind, you'll find that you're better able to remember things, concentrate, and perform much better. Now, I find the next statement very uncomfortable. Yoga prevents the onset of mental health conditions, which are prevalent during adolescence. Wow, that's a big statement. I understand that this information is trying to sell the virtues of yoga, but that is a statement which could be easily misinterpreted, in my opinion. I have no doubt that yoga is a positive lifestyle choice, which benefits mental well-being, but the word prevent is quite concrete for me. Finally, yoga reduces the effects of traumatic experiences. For those who have been abused, as well as military personnel who have seen active duty, yoga is a positive complementary therapy for dealing with mental conditions such as PTSD. I think the word complementary is the right word to use here. As a counsellor, I would always encourage clients to try as many positive activities as they could fit in. Mental health, as we know, is complex, and offering a multiple solution for management or recovery has to be better than one route alone. If you've been abused as a child or adolescent, statistically, you are at a greater risk of heart condition, according to a recent report. One theory is that victimised children have to deal with how much cortisol, also known as the fight or flight or stress hormone, they have in their bodies. A researcher said, these children are more likely to remain alert. They can't relax. They become more vulnerable to stress because they worry they will be abused again. We have found evidence indicating that people with heart disease have higher rates of cortisol. Another theory is that people with more stress are also more likely to have chronic inflammation, which is shown to be at a higher rate in heart condition patients. This again is a controversial subject and one that some may find uncomfortable, but it's interesting nonetheless. One doctor is quick to point out, child abuse is just one factor of many. I don't want people who have experienced abuse to feel like they've been condemned to have heart disease. They have slightly higher odds and just need to be more vigilant in monitoring their weight and checking their blood pressure. A similar study specific to patients in Wales suggests children who have been subjected to abuse, trauma or violence are 4 times more likely to develop type 2 diabetes, 3 times more likely to develop heart disease, and 3 times more likely to develop respiratory diseases. Like many previous studies linking early life characteristics and experiences with late life serious diseases, this study does not explain precisely how such links operate. Biologically, further research will be required to understand that process. Moving on to gaming. Are you one of the thousands of people who enjoy computer gaming? If so, you are actually one of 2.6 billion gamers worldwide who enjoy the pastime. Interestingly, there are more female gamers than males. Women account for 52% of the UK gaming population, up 3% from 3 years ago. On average, UK gamers spend 22 hours per week in front of a screen, coupled with potentially spending 8 hours a day looking at screens at work. So it should come as no surprise that mental health issues associated with technology are becoming more and more prevalent. As we heard in the news, gaming in particular is the focus of the World Health Organization's attention, as it confirmed gaming disorder in its draft of the 11th International Classification of Diseases guidelines. The WHO characterised gaming disorder as a pattern of persistent or reoccurrent gaming behaviours both on and offline. Let's have a look at some of the traits. These include prioritising gaming over life activities and a continuation of gaming despite negative consequences. Currently, patients must have shown symptoms for at least 12 months before a diagnosis can be made. This means that in the future, treatment for gaming disorders could be funded by the National Health Service, although there is not yet any guidance drawn up on how to actually treat this particular condition. By and large, a gaming disorder will fall into the addiction category, so it's likely that treatment will be similar to that of alcohol, gambling, and substance abuse. What is interesting is that there has been very little response from the games industry, as clearly the games are addictive. But that's the point of them. I guess beer manufacturers can't be held responsible for someone who is receiving therapy for alcohol abuse. It's a tricky one. Will this fall on the shoulders of parents, as I'm sure we'll soon see stories of young people in therapy due to gaming addictions? Finally this week in the review of the news, as we've heard, mindfulness is so 2017, according to one psychologist here in the UK. Mindfulness is out and should be replaced with mindlessness. And if you've just tuned in, this is a real story, I promise. Having searched around for some more information, this isn't a new concept. The Guardian newspaper published information back in 2015, and there's probably a good reason why it hasn't taken off. According to The Guardian, mindlessness operates on the basis that your mind and body already know how to take care of themselves. You don't need to consciously concentrate on your breathing or what you can smell, because you've been unwittingly doing this for a long time. To be truly mindless, you need to rely on a combination of snap judgments, uninformed intuition, and absent-minded daydreaming. Now, I've yet to decide how being uninformed and absent-minded will affect my anxious thoughts. So what do you think about incorporating mindlessness into your daily routine? How about as a therapist? And I've thought about this a lot. Trusting your intuition is a confidence trait, and a quite good one at that. But how would you deal with a client who is so confident to make snap judgments and focuses on absent-minded daydreaming? Arguably, your client's action is of no consequence. It's not for a therapist to agree or disagree. But if it's having a negative consequence on their lives, then it would be something I would have to explore further with them. A central characteristic of mindlessness is the idea that a wandering mind is a creative mind. Drifting off in the middle of a boring task might unconsciously lead to a chain of events that sparks a profound personal epiphany. These aha moments tend to sneak up during unfocused moments. Again, according to The Guardian, the most fascinating aspect of mindlessness is its insistence that basic politeness is exhausting. Remaining socially awake in conversation is a high-maintenance interaction that wears down all parties and accomplishes nothing. But what if you drained a person's energy prior to the conversation so that they lacked the oomph to hide, escape, or water down what they were thinking? With exhaustion comes disinhibition, allowing for a more honest conversation with both participants, and a conversation which both will enjoy more, say The Guardian. I'm just wondering how you would react if I said your hair was a mess and the clothes you were wearing are, well, a bit of a fashion faux pas. I can see some elements of mindlessness working one day, perhaps, but for the time being, I doubt it will take over the popularity of mindfulness. Just quickly, and whilst we're looking at slightly left-field therapy, this popped up on my social media feed last week. It's an oldie from 2008, but one I had to share with you. This is laughter therapy.
You've heard the phrase, laughter is the best medicine. And laughter releases endorphins, which make you feel happy immediately. Doing laughter in a group means that you get to share laughter with so many people. It's infectious, it makes you happy, it's a positive mental attitude. The difference that you get with people from the beginning of a session to the end of the session, it makes you feel so wonderful that you've helped people get like that. Pretend that you're on the mobile phone and that you are having the most hilarious conversation. Then after a bit you can share your conversation with other people. There's been a lot of scientific research and medical research which shows that people that laugh and have a positive mental attitude actually prevents disease. It's really good for your physical health as well as your emotional and mental health.
Just close your eyes and just feel very intensely laughter.
I'm Catherine and I like flying!
I'm Adam and I like tickling!
We do yogic breathing in between laughing. We also do a laughter meditation at the end, and then we do relaxation, and all of that comes from yoga.
Yeah, I've been recovering from a health problem, and laughter has always been the best medicine as far as I'm concerned. So when I read about it, I thought, right, I'm going to give that a go.
Hip, hip, hooray, good laughter day today. Dusty bluebells on World Laughter Day.
Hey! I think it's one of those things you have to kind of do rather than be told about. I think we take ourselves too seriously too much, and I think life's very serious at times, and we all need to sometimes just laugh, be silly, but in a very kind of safe space.
We don't laugh because we're happy. We're happy because we laugh.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Wise words on the way, music from 10cc still to come, and in this week's Toolbox Talk, I'll be looking at holidays that are designed to clear the mind. Staying with the holiday theme, if you haven't already noticed, this time of year the adverts on TV turn our attention to the perfect holiday destination. And why wouldn't you be tempted? Whilst the winter months play out, we dream about heading to sunnier climes. Proof that holidays increase mental well-being are proven, although we have to endure the stress of the airport terminal first. But for many, the thought of a summer holiday can be an anxious time, and this can be attributed to a number of factors. Let's look at finances. Not having the dispensable income can make adults feel inadequate and a failure. Holidays are many things, but cheap is often not the case, and keeping up with the neighbours or seeing holiday photos on social media only adds to that pressure. What about being agoraphobic? I imagine a holiday would fill you with dread rather than enthusiasm. I guess the same for people dealing with OCD. Simply getting to and from your destination can be a real struggle. It is estimated that one in four are fearful of flying. And if you holiday here in the UK, negotiating the motorway network can be a stressful experience. And more often than not, when a driver is nervous, the rest of the passengers will be on edge also. And this doesn't make for a good start to a holiday. Being a carer is difficult at the best of times, but being a carer on holiday is hardly a holiday. Before we look at holidays of a different kind, let's take a look at the 10 most common things we argue about. Let's see if you can relate to any of these. Number 1, when to leave for the airport. Number 2, packing too much. Number 3, navigating the best route. Number 4, who keeps hold of the passports? Number 5, staring at other people on the beach. Number 6, refusing to wear sun cream. Number 7, late nights out. 8, flirting with the hotel staff. Do people really do that? Number 9, and I love this one, the I told you so conversations. And finally, number 10, where we parked at the airport. I can certainly relate to point 10. Finding your car in the big airport car parks after a long flight, well, that doesn't help your stress levels, does it? When you go on holiday, here are 4 vital tips to maintain a healthy balance. Just remember, the issues you face on holiday are largely the same ones you deal with at home. Expect that they'll crop up, and that way they won't overshadow anything else. Try to postpone arguments. Very few arguments suffer from being postponed. Most of the time you won't care enough to revisit it. Don't forget to switch your phone off. It's unfair on your partner to be constantly checking work emails whilst you're supposed to be spending quality time together. So switch off your phone, and if you really must check in with the work schedule, how about half an hour in the morning or half an hour in the evening, just to focus your mind on it so it doesn't distract from the rest of your holiday together. Here's a good one. Schedule some me time. If your busy lives at home means you're not used to living in each other's pockets, set some time off when you can pursue your own interests. A morning swim or an afternoon stroll around the local shops can give you some much needed space and time. So back to holidays that are accessible. As you may know, I'm a volunteer counsellor at Mind, and I was taking a look through the Mind website recently and I found a few pages on holidays for guests who are experiencing mental health issues or who have experienced mental health problems. You can find hotels where access to help and assistance is available, and I thought this was a great idea. There's also information on charities that run holiday break schemes, and the website also signposts you to an organisation called Tourism for All, which offers help and advice to find the right destination for you, and even helps you plan your holiday from the moment you leave the house to arriving back after your break, and of course everything in between. So the website addresses I've mentioned then, Mind, www.mind.org.uk, and Tourism for All, www.tourismforall.org.uk.
5 ways to get moving and feel better. Number one, start small. You don't need to be lifting hundreds of pounds or run a marathon to feel better. Try a short walk or join a fun class. We're all different, so different things will help us feel better. Number two, be kind to yourself. If you're doing anything more than you normally would, then that's a step in the right direction. Keep a diary or tell a friend about your achievements. Number three, everyday things count. Gardening, vacuuming, mopping, those pesky chores are good for your mental health too. Number four, clear your head. Physical activity often helps you concentrate on something other than unwanted thoughts and worries. Number five, celebrate your achievements. Give yourself a reward whenever you've done well. These are just a few ideas. Why not add yours?
The Therapy Suite.
I heard a dark voice beside of me, and I looked round in a state of fright. I saw four faces, one man, a brother from the gutter. They looked me up and down a bit and turned to each other.
Yeah.
Before we move on, if you have a mental health story to tell, whether it's your journey or someone close to you, or you run a mental health project, do get in touch either on Twitter at Duncan_Ellison or email duncan@thinkduncan.com. This is UK Health Radio. My name's Duncan and I'll be with you each week to put a new twist on mental health. If you like this show and want more, you can listen to all the different programmes UK Health Radio has to offer. You can choose the live play schedule or download your favourite programme on demand wherever and whenever you need to. In this week's Toolbox Talk, I want to continue with the holiday theme, and I have a selection of very different holiday breaks aimed at clearing your mind and reassessing yourself. I'll be honest, some of this information challenged me. I'm not sure whether I agree with one or two of these retreats. But in the spirit of impartiality and being non-judgmental, of course, I thought I would share them. I'd certainly be very interested to hear from other counsellors and indeed non-therapists regarding your thoughts on these holidays. Here's one that I'm not sure about. Couples therapy in Thailand. Instead of seeking help whilst you're at home and busy with other commitments, devote a full week of working on your relationship. Whether you're struggling with a specific problem such as an affair or just have a nagging sense that you're not as happy as you could be, you'll spend 16 hours with your counsellor and get 12 weeks of follow-up advice online. The retreat is based at a boutique hotel and costs start from £1,100 a couple, including transfers, 7 nights accommodation and therapy. So, do you have a phobia? If so, head to Bristol. Have you always fancied visiting Australia but too scared of the creepy crawlies? Perhaps it's time to spend a day at Bristol Zoo tackling your fears. The zoo offers a dedicated course called Living with Spiders in its education centre, run by a qualified counsellor and hypnotherapist. It lasts up to 4 hours and includes a variety of approaches to overcoming arachnophobia, including talks, relaxation, hypnotherapy, and an optional meeting with some (friendly) spiders. There's a similar course for those who also fear snakes, and prices start from £95. How about yoga and dating in Goa? You can escape the commercialism of Valentine's Day on a yoga retreat in Goa. You could take your partner with you for a romantic break, or you could go alone and indulge in some me time. Or keep your eyes peeled for a sexy classmate. Apparently, several couples have met on this quantum yoga course, which focuses on a dynamic, flowing form of yoga. It takes place on a harmonic eco-retreat where you'll explore an ancient Portuguese fort, chill out around a barbecue on a beautiful private beach, and take part in a sunset yoga class. Accommodation is booked separately and the choices range from beach huts to a 5-star hotel. And prices start from £950, including all yoga, brunch, 2 massages, 2 excursions, but excluding accommodation and flights. How about this? And this is a bit closer to home. You can find peace in Herefordshire. For those that have done a silent retreat before, this break is for you. The first few days are tough and your mind races, but then you have so much time to think through your issues that you come out feeling free, calm and happy. A 10-day silent meditation retreat in Herefordshire involves a process of self-purification by self-observation to help you eradicate suffering and tension. You'll feel liberated and able to face your problems in a calm way. There's no religious element and no charge, although those who've completed the course usually make a donation at the end. Heading into Scotland, how do you fancy becoming more spiritual in Moray? The Findhorn Foundation, east of Inverness, describes itself as a spiritual community, eco-village and international centre for holistic learning, helping to unfold a new human consciousness and create a positive and sustainable future. Visitors are welcome to spend a week there. On 4 mornings, you'll work in the gardens and buildings and participate in meditation, sacred dance and nature outings. Apparently, laughter and joy are an integral part of the experience. So you'll need to put aside your cynicisms, and prices start from £425, including accommodation and all of your meals. How do you fancy joining an artistic community in Germany? Spending time with creative people who are living a very different life could inspire you to make a change, or at least make a bit of artwork. There are dozens of retreats run by artists among the many free volunteer placements. The idea is that you work in return for food and board. Some projects are setting up alternative accommodation for travellers, some are creative communes, and many are looking for creative types to volunteer and join their community. Examples include international art research centres in Germany, which call for people with skills to help with art production and research, maintenance of its castle sites, and dealing with tourists. Finally, you can be inspired in Pembrokeshire. The Do Lectures is a small event for big thinkers, with lectures by 30 speakers covering everything from business and technology to sport and design. It's designed to impart knowledge and inspire the audience to do something amazing. Held at a lovely forest farm, on it has space for 80 people to attend, and accommodation is in furnished tents. And this is included, as are live music and food. Tickets aren't cheap though, at £1,500, but if it changes your life, well, surely that's worth it. If you tuned into last week's show, I announced the launch of a new book all about mental health. Called The Framework and written by Rebecca Marks, it's part self-help, part mental facts, and part anecdotal. I was lucky enough to get a pre-release copy before Christmas, and I promise you, it's a book which you'll definitely enjoy reading. A particular chapter that I found really interesting was the chapter on auto-stress. Rebecca has recorded a few elements to share with you this week, which I'll play in a moment. If you want more information about the book, log on to www.thewellnesssociety.org, and when you sign up to the mailing list, you'll receive a full chapter free of charge. You'll also find more information on the book and how to purchase it.
Chapter 2.1. Different methods are needed to address stress, auto-stress and anxiety. Problems cannot be solved with the same mindset that created them, Albert Einstein. Our mindset refers to our sets of beliefs about the world. We can think of them as our core beliefs. These beliefs shape our reality. They influence how we interpret the world, what we pay attention to, and ultimately, how we feel. Developing awareness of our mindsets is therefore an incredibly powerful tool when it comes to enhancing our well-being. To access a core belief, we can keep asking ourselves, why? This is called Socratic questioning, or the downward arrow technique. Here's an example. I'll never feel better. Why? I've tried different things to help me feel less anxious, and none of them have helped. Why? I'm an anxious person, and there's nothing I can do about it. Why? Because of my genes, anxiety runs in my family. Why? Because anxiety is a genetic condition, and science tells us there's nothing we can do about our genes. Here, the core belief is about how anxiety is genetic and therefore incurable. And this core belief is false. It's true that we can be born with a vulnerability towards stress and anxiety, but new scientific research in this area is incredibly empowering. We truly have the power to rewire our brains and calm our bodies. In this part of the framework, we'll take a look at three of Polly's new mindsets that are influencing her CBT cycle in ways that are helping her alleviate stress, auto-stress and anxiety. Her first new mindset is, different methods are needed to address stress, auto-stress and anxiety. Before, stress and anxiety were fuzzy terms that she used interchangeably. After reading about them, she now understands what they are, how they affect her, and what she can do about it. There was a point at which everything just clicked together. She understood why she was the way she was and saw a path forward to feeling better. So what exactly are stress, auto-stress, and anxiety? Their exact definitions have actually been a subject of debate by experts for a long time. Stress. Kelly McGonigal, an expert in the new science of stress, offers us this definition. Stress is what arises when something we care about is at stake. Stress is best understood as manifesting in the body. It's the racing heart, sweaty palms, and funny tummy we're all familiar with. A key part in all this stress is the amygdala, the part of the brain responsible for generating our stress response. Experts agree that central to the definition of stress is the perception of threat and danger. You've probably heard of the fight or flight stress response as a reaction to perceived danger. In fact, we have various stress responses. For example, we experience a different type of stress response when we perceive a challenge. It's possible to transform our stress response in a way that helps us perform. As we'll discover, our beliefs about stress and our mindset play an important part in how it impacts us. Auto-stress. Dr. John Arden, author of several books integrating neuroscience and psychotherapy, recently put forward the term auto-stress for describing what happens when our body's stress response goes on for a long time. He explains, like autoimmune disorders that hijack the immune system, attacking the body instead of protecting it, auto-stress transforms the stress response system into something that attacks the self rather than protecting it. When we are auto-stressed, we experience a wide range of physical stress symptoms on an ongoing basis, such as breathing difficulties, heart palpitations, chest tightness, headaches, IBS, lightheadedness, and so forth. We experience these symptoms regardless of our situation. Auto-stress is associated with what psychologists call a high level of stress reactivity. People with high levels of stress reactivity may be more vulnerable to developing auto-stress. They may release more stress hormones, have a stronger sympathetic nervous system reaction, experience higher blood pressure and or have a higher heart rate during their stress response. Throughout their lives, people with high stress reactivity may experience stress responses that can often feel out of proportion to the situation. Anxiety is currently conceptualized as encompassing both mental and physical symptoms. In the framework, I'm arguing that auto-stress is a better term for understanding the physical symptoms of anxiety. I feel the term auto-stress yields more understanding and more compassion. I believe the distinction is particularly important as different methods are needed to address physical symptoms, what I label auto-stress, and mental symptoms, what I label anxiety.
Let's close the programme this week with wise words. And this week I want to share a passage written by the grandfather of therapy, Sigmund Freud. He comments, "One day, in retrospect, the years of struggle will strike you as the most beautiful." Thanks for your company this week. Don't forget, if you have any mental health concerns or have been affected by anything raised in today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well and keep smiling.